We're going to read a very short passage from Old Testament together, from the prophet Micah, one verse, and it's on our screen. Let's say this together. He has shown you, O mortal, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you? To act justly, and to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. I love how we've been singing this morning how Jesus is our King and invites us to submit to him. I love how we've sung that the King says love and peace and serve and truth. If you're like, oh, is that what the King says? You might want to lean back into our Sermon on the Mount series that we did last term, where we looked at why those are the things that the King says and that we want to live like as we turn towards the King. I love how we've talked about the King being the one who was crucified as we sung Come to the Altar. And we've heard how in that the King's blood shed was enough for every wrong thing we've done and all the consequences of feeling that. And I want us to stay with that place and think a bit more in our moments of incredible opportunity and deep crisis. Think about what the King might be saying to us and how might we act. Those that were with us 2 weeks ago, remember, we started the term with an all-age gathering, everyone together, thinking about how God was calling us into spectacularly ordinary lives, coming from the highs of festivals and the amazing things we might read or see online about what God's doing around the world. And God's doing some amazing things, including in our church, including in our town. But stepping into the everyday of pursuing that wherever we are and whatever we do. And today I want to take that a little step further and say, how do we do that when we interact with some of the things that are wrong with the world? How do we declare and demonstrate who the King is as we find ourselves coming across some of the stuff that's been filling our news papers and screens and whichever bubbles we read from and hang out in? Now, this was at one point going to be a talk about the King being the King over creation. One of the things we like to do in Kairos is spend a bit of time in September, some of our gatherings, some of our other activities, thinking about our call to cultivate and care for creation. I firmly believe that. Deeply, deeply believe that when God made this world, he said it was good and he invites us to steward it and care for it. And that that God's heart breaks with ours as we look at the brokenness of nature, depletion, of remilitarization, of human-caused climate change, and all those things are real. Don't believe anyone who would tell you they're not. And the King does invite us to act into those and change. But as I was kind of crafting this sermon and listening to God, wondering and looking at the news of our summer, felt like we almost needed to take a step back from that and just remind ourselves why the King even says, be involved in justice and live to make a difference in the world anyway. Why is that so important? If you want more on the environment creation care stuff, there'll be bits of that. But come to Forest Church next week. We'll do some of that there. Today I want to step back, remind ourselves that what the King requires of us is to act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with him. We need a bigger picture. And I guess the reminder that I most want to leave us with is simple. Don't give up on justice. Don't give up on environmental justice, because surprise, surprise, it's going to be hard work reducing our reliance on fossil fuels. We knew that. Don't give up on it. Don't give up on racial justice just because you hear loud voices telling you that that's something that you don't need to worry about anymore and doesn't affect us here. Don't give up on economic justice when you're told that you need to live in the real world and protect those that are close to you and not worry so much about everyone else. The king believes in justice, and so do I, and I invite you not to give up on it. God calls us to live, to act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with him. I do believe we're in a season of crisis and opportunity that could lead to revival among our nations. I do believe God's stirring. I have been hearing stories of people being far more open to hearing the good news of Jesus in our moment. God is waking lions in our nation. God is giving messages to people. God is drawing people back. But these things never happen in a vacuum. And as well as lions waking up, so are dragons. There are well-funded organizations trying to awake the dragon of racism in our nation deliberately. And we need to be wise and discerning and listen to the king. There are other dragons being awoken amongst us. And we need to be people who will firmly follow the king, who will declare the king's goodness, and will live in his ways. Don't give up on justice. I wonder how you feel if you look at war abroad, but close, and rearmament, and as you notice the grief, the anger, the fear stirring in so many people. I wonder what your answers to that are. We're invited to listen to King Jesus, to imitate his ways, to trust in his call, to share hope, and to show people what hope looks like. The Micah passage we read at the start. Let me read it slightly wider context. With what shall I come before the Lord? This is Micah 6. Bow before the exalted God. Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves a year old? Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams, with 10,000 rivers of oil? He has shown you, O mortal, what is good. What does he require of you? To act justly, to love mercy, to walk humbly with our God. This is something the prophets would regularly say to God's people. There were two things they kept railing against: idols and injustice. Don't have any other gods and don't treat people unfairly. Again and again, that was the witness of the Old Testament law and prophets. Stretched right back to some of the founding stories of God's people. So, as they're liberated from Egypt, where they've been living as slaves, John, there should be a couple more slides on this, and there's one that might have a Deuteronomy passage on it. So they're liberated from slavery and led into a promised land. God teaches them how to live as a new kind of Iron Age community. He gives them laws for all sorts of different life, family relationships, what to do with mold in your house, which is practical if you've been living as a slave or a wandering person, because you don't have a house, so you need to know what to do with it when you get there. But also how to function with others. And he says this: don't deprive the foreigner or the fatherless of justice. Don't take the cloak of the widow as a pledge. Remember you were slaves in Egypt. The Lord redeemed you from there. So I command you to do this. When you're harvesting in your field and you overlook a sheaf, do not go back to get it. Leave it for the foreigner, the fatherless, and the widow, so that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. And the Bible's full. The law and the prophets are full of this kind of stuff. Protect foreigners protect the poor, protect orphans, protect widows. Have a preference for the least and the most vulnerable around you. The Bible's full of this stuff because the king cares about justice deeply. Now, I wonder what justice means to you. Because in our contested time, even that word is up for grabs. Realize this, when I was reading in our prayer room, where we were praying 2 weeks ago that God's name would be known as great around the world, where the leaders of several nations were gathering together, and I was hearing reports of President of China stood next to the President of North Korea and the President of Russia saying it's a time for justice in our world. I thought, wow, justice means a lot to different people. Many different things to different people. We need to be discerning and wise. So what does justice mean? Can you pop the Hebrew-looking word up, please? I didn't study Hebrew, but I had learned this. The Hebrew word for justice is mishpat. Mishpat. And it is kind of a legal term, and it means the judgment, the declaration, the speaking out of someone. Justice in the Old Testament Bible, mishpat, is kind of the declaration of how things should be and the kind of the arbitrating between different groups. Sometimes it is retributive. I have trouble saying that word, but you know the kind of eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth stuff that Jesus really clearly critiques and does away with in the New Testament. That kind of stuff. If your enemy hits you, hit them hard back because they're not going to then mess with you. Well, actually, the Hebrew Bible doesn't say hit them hard back. It says hit them equally back because then they won't mess with you. Jesus says don't do that. More often than not, though, even in the Old Testament, justice is this idea of restorative, drawing people up, bringing people together to the way God intended things to be. Like we read in the Old Testament reading earlier. Together, being restored so that God's judgment, God's declarations, God's speakings are more put into practice in the world. And because they're people, so often in the Old Testament, it was failed to be more fully brought, just as it is in our day. But that doesn't mean God gave up on it, because the king believes in justice. I talked about revival earlier. Historically, revival and justice have always gone hand in hand. Aidan, Cuthbert, Hilda, experiencing personal renewal in the context of group revival as Celtic Christianity came to these shores, set up places of sanctuary, of peace, of justice along the northeast coast, that the north might be evangelized. Francis in Italy experienced personal renewal and revival that led to an embrace of poverty and a greater care for creation that others were desperate to follow and connected with. Wesley led an awakening that rescued people from physical despair and its addictions. Was an early voice against the slave trade. He wrote a very unpopular for his time pamphlet against it. He wrote to Wilberforce. The last recorded letter of Wesley is to Wilberforce, encouraging him to remove that excretable villainy of slavery from our nation. Revival is the justice. In the second awakening of America, inspired the Booths to try to stretch for something in the UK, and they set up the Salvation Army, rescuing people from spiritual darkness, from poverty, railing against social injustice in their day. The Welsh revival saw a decline in criminality and social upheaval. Courts, it said, at the time of the Welsh revival, at the place, had nothing to do. Gambling shops closed. The Azusa Street revival that led to Pentecostalism came at a time and alongside steps towards women's suffrage, so votes for women. Some of the those involved in the early days of Pentecostalism were involved in the American suffrage movement, and racial integration in a way that the church hadn't seen before. Now, all of those things were contested and fought because there will always be people at times of revival who would rather have a noisy but flat story of conversion and nothing else rather than a deep practice of conversion of heart and action and pocket. It would always be contested, but it's always been there because the king is about justice. And so what might the king be about in our moment? There's a Wimber quote about justice that I don't have time for, but I'll send to anyone that wants it. Wimber was the founder of the Vineyard Church, big player in the charismatic. Lots of the renewal and revival stuff we're seeing now is directly connected to his influence. These kind of things, our longing for fairness and to be treated equally, our hunger for safety and to live at peace, our railing against economic injustice, our love of creation, our desire to see it preserved. These aren't luxuries for a better time. These aren't middle-class ideas, fine for Paddington, but no place in the real world. By the way, I think Paddington 2, probably one of the best films of the last decade, but these aren't luxuries or side things. They're the very decrees and desires of the king who treated all who came with to him with love and inspired his followers to erase inequality between them. The king who sought out and gave dignity and provided for those with poverty and sickness around him. The king who's the very creator of the cosmos, whose father declared at the start, over creation, in joy, it's good. Paul says that all of creation groans for the sons of God, the children of God, to be revealed. He says all creation longs for reconciliation. The reconciliation Jesus is bringing. That's Romans 8, Colossians 2. Speaks of Jesus bringing everything together. Plants, comets, people, rivers, beavers, eagles, you name it. Bringing it all together. And Revelation dreams of that final moment of renewal and restoration that touches every aspect of our lives. And if you're hungry for that, if you desire that, you are not a fanciful dreamer. You share the desires of the king. So don't give up on justice. Where then does that lead us today? So I look at our world, I see two trends. One I've already talked about, the kind of dismissing the hunger for justice as Paddington-ness. That kind of fine in a better world, but not to do with reality. So let's just quietly forget it. Let's just care for the people closest to us, the people like us. Let's push everyone else away. Let's not keep going with the complexities of this. That's one of the trends I see. It scares me because I can only see it going towards darkness. On the other side, I see a group of people desperately trying to work and hold on to and fight for the things of, I would say, the kingdom, but without the king and without his power and presence in their lives. And so getting caught up in particular justice issues around one side or another of a cultural war, getting further polarized and then just leading to greater cycles of injustice between us. One side dismissing it as things of the past. We don't need to worry about that now. There's other realities. Another side going at it, but in human strength without the turning and the empowering of the king. I think the King invites us, King Jesus, to find a different way, because both those approaches lead us under-resourced and ineffective. We're called to be part of the restoration of everything through our relationship with the King and his restoration of us, and only empowered by him. The King Jesus. Because behind every injustice, behind every inequality, behind every breakdown is the reality of a fallen and broken world. Bible word for it, we sang it in Come to the Altar, is sin. Behind every injustice is the reality of sin. Humans rebelling against God and turning against each other. And the only powerful, final, fulfilling dealing with sin, brokenness of the world, humans rebelling against God, turning against each other, is Jesus, through his teaching, through his life, through his death, his resurrection. Jesus, who pays for guilt and shame and fear, when we turn to him, when we repent, and when we live differently. Jesus, who takes our brokenness and invites us to stand and follow and walk and work with him. Many of you are following Jesus and engaged in justice work in your workplaces, through charities you support, through your volunteer time, in your connections with others. Don't give up and don't let yourself be discouraged as the world gets harder and darker, and it will. Continue to come to the King and let him lead you and strengthen you. We need you. The world needs you. Let's be with one another, even when the particular justice thing seems to drive us in slightly different directions. Let's recognize we do it for the King and be with one another. One more little thought on this. It's okay. I've already hinted at it, but I think more and more in our world, on different sides of political boundaries, are sliding into a profoundly un-Jesus-shaped pursuit of what we've described as justice. Based on violence, intimidation, the loudest voice, the most eloquent speaker, rather than the commissioning and the equipping of the King. And I wonder if we need to relearn how to come to God differently to those around us. And I think Jesus left us a resource for that. And I think there's a clue for it in the cross. Of course, there's clues for it in the cross, but perhaps not in the way some of you might think. So on the cross, we're told Jesus speaks a line from Psalm 22. My God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from helping me, from the words of my groaning? What he's doing in that point on the cross is reaching into his hard wiring as a Jewish follower. And he is stepping into a practice kind of written into Jewish worship and Christian worship through the Psalms that we have forgotten, that's called lament. That allows space for God's people to say, God, it's not as it should be. Would you move? I think we're in a moment where we need to learn lament again. Incredible opportunity in our world. God doing so many things, but incredible crisis and difficulty. We're going to need to learn how to lament. Honestly bring our stuff to God to transform. Because if we don't, if we stay motivated by fear and anger and grief in our activity, we don't have anything else, anything new to offer the world. I've been looking at the news of the last couple of weeks, watching protests, marches, counter-protests in London, driving to York and seeing lots of flags on lampposts there and some here, seeing the outpouring of grief at the silencing and murder of Charlie Kirk in America, watching the war and the stirrings and rearmaments and getting perilously close to disaster around the world. What I've noticed in me stirring is anger and grief. Because those are the right responses to all of those things. But they're not lasting motivations for justice work. If you start to do something because you're angry, you'll do one of two things. You'll either burn out or you'll injure the person at the other end of your anger. If you start to do something because you're grieving, you won't find a lasting resource for change. There's one lasting resource for witness through words and actions that will see us through the hardship of bringing justice. It's love. And the way we get love is by bringing our anger, bringing our grief, bringing our fear, not sharing it with lots of others, not necessarily leading it straight to action, but bringing it to the cross and saying, Jesus, you died for this. You died for this wrongness that was in the world, and you died for the consequences that I feel of it. You died for the shame I feel and not being able to make a difference. You died for the guilt I feel of being complicit in this thing. You died for the fear I feel of being silenced when I want to speak up. You died for the grief I feel. And if you read the stories of Jesus' death, you will see all of those emotions expressed around Jesus at the cross and him taking them on. And as we step into that, and as we learn to lament, and as we give those things to Jesus, something happens. He takes them and lets them die with him, and he resurrects them into love. So whatever your political leaning and your sense of injustice and desire to do good in the world, you're able to do it, not of anger or guilt or fear or shame, but out of love, because you've taken it to Jesus. There's many things I think are wrong with the world, but one is that we haven't made enough time to lament, to leave at the cross, and to let Jesus resurrect our grief, our sadness, our fear. Those are the things that I've heard so many people saying they're noticing in protests, in conversations, in responses: grief, sadness, anger, fear. We need to find a way to hold them before God, to ask that he'd resurrect them into love, so that we together can share good news and be good news. Don't give up on justice. Follow the King, make it personal, act justly, love mercy, walk humbly with your God. And as a first step towards that, be honest about your responses and complicity in what's wrong in the world. Do it deeply, do it often, and then step into love. All creation is waiting, is groaning, is longing for us to do this, for the children of God to be revealed. I'm going to invite us to do just a few things in response to this, to try and have a go at some lament. It might feel a bit hard work and bumpy because I've never tried it before, but it feels like it's important for the moment. I had lots more I wondered about saying, and so It's great that you're in communities because it allows me to say it. So I've written some three community sessions around justice and prayer that I think I would find useful to do with others. If they're useful to you, there's 10 copies here and I'll put them in the talk on the website, take them away. And I don't think this is about necessarily politics. I think it's about the step we take before we get involved in politics, which is come to Jesus. And Jesus, as we do that, he'll still lead us into different political directions, that's fine. But he'll just do that through love, not anger and fear. So we're going to try and have a go at it together. Got a prayer that kind of feels like a lament prayer. We're going to say, I invite you in a moment to say it with me. Where do I find it? There it is. It says, middle left and right. I just mean where we are in the room, not where do you lean in this, you know, just to be clear. It's a prayer about some of the things that are wrong with the world and our part in it. We're going to pray it. We're going to have a moment or two of quiet. And then Helen and James are going to lead us in a setting of a line from the Lord's Prayer, your kingdom come, your will be done. And then from there, we're going to pray for courage and hope to live differently. Those of us that aren't used to long spoken out prayers or feeling uncomfortable about things in church might find this weird. If you do, feel free to step out and enjoy the sunshine or think, I'm going to tell Ben never to do that again. That was really weird. But just go for it for today. So you might like to stand or sit, or if you've got the knees for it and want to, you might like to kneel. That's a good lament-type posture. Let's just shift our posture slightly to bring our thoughts to God. And then the three banks of people in the room invite you to read these words with me. First bit middle, then the left-hand side, your left, and then the right. Let's say this together. Then we'll have some silence. So we say together, Father of all creation, we believe that you uphold and sustain all that you have made, while also lovingly giving us the freedom to live in relationship with the rest of creation. We ask for your forgiveness for the ways we've abused that freedom through what we have done and what we have left undone. We bring our lament and our longing for a renewed earth to you now. Our communities are divided. Our peoples are fearful. Our neighbours are unloved. And all creation groans. We share the blame and the loss. As your people, we come to you weary and heavy laden. We come with our sadness and our anger. We bring you our guilt and our shame. We ask that you would make grief holy in your eyes.